Welcome to Real Talk to You, Real Talk. I'm Pierre Hamilton, and this is the show where I host a roundtable discussion where my guests and I explore the issues of the day. Today's show is about the internet. We're going to use usage-based billing and the CRTC as a jumping-off point. I rifled through my Rolodex for people affected by or interested in these topics, and three names came up. To my left, I have Justin Tripp, a graphic designer specializing in motion graphics, aka video. Justin?
Thank you for having me.
No. Thank you for coming.
No, thank you.
And directly in front of me, I have Matt Frainer of Mobile Editor, Globe and Mail.
And Pierre.
Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, welcome. Everyone's welcome here. Well, I don't know if that's true. And to my right, I have making his second appearance on the show, George Gabbro, web development. Say hey, George.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
No. Thank you again. This has been a contentious topic, to say the least. So let's get right into it. I'm going to do just a little bit of a background for maybe, I think a lot of people have been following this, but in case you haven't, the issue at hand is a CRTC decision that basically said Bell could impose usage-based billing on, I guess, ISPs that wholesale or buy bandwidth from them. And they said, listen, you know, if Bell's going to do it, you too are going to have to do it as well, which meant that companies such as TechSavvy would basically have to knock down plans from, I think one of their plans was 200 gigs, and it would now be 25, right? They also, basically, this also prevents them from being able to have unlimited plans because the overage rates, the amount that they're going to charge people once you go over your allotted bandwidth is pretty expensive. So that's sort of the lay of the land from where we're at right now. Why don't we hear from you gentlemen as to why you're interested in this topic or why this bugs you? We'll start on my left, Justin.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, like you said, I'm a graphic designer and I do a lot of work in video. I work from home, so obviously the majority of my business is done from there. And obviously, like, the main form of communication is email, and I'm sending video clips and receiving stuff. And in all honesty, I don't know if what my usage would be, but it's more of a concern because things are just like everything is shifting to the internet. Like it's one thing to be conducting business, but now it's like, okay, well, here comes my music, here comes my my TV and all kinds of forms of entertainment. So everything is coming out of our computers, and obviously they're, you know, looking to make a buck on that. Bell wants to acquire CTV,
which is something we'll talk about a little later.
So I just it's a little bit of a concern because, you know, I'm home all day and I use it for business and for, you know, and for pleasure. So read into that what you will. But
and Matt, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, from my point of view as a mobile editor at the Globe and Mail, we're seeing a big shift in how users are accessing our content, be it stories or audio or video or whatever, and especially through mobile. We're seeing a huge uptake, and there are going to be there's a pressure point coming where consumers are going to need to start to pay attention to the amount of data that they use, because through streaming video, through using things like Netflix that are very new and very recent, the limits that have been set by the big three on mobile and on desktop broadband, I think are going to quickly be hit and eclipsed. And I think a lot of people are going to start to see overage charges that aren't seeing now. So I think there needs to be a discussion around what data actually costs. I mean, the overage charges that the companies are putting in place are, you know, a couple dollars a gigabyte. And I've seen, you know, general estimates are between like 1 cent and 10 cents per gigabyte, right? So there's not really there needs to be some transparency there. And I don't think being totally opposed to usage-based billing is the answer. But there needs to be a discussion around like what this infrastructure actually costs and who's paying for it, and how the fact that we're kind of we have a sort of an oligopoly with the big three companies, and how that influences the price of data. So, and for me personally, as a consumer, it makes a difference because I'm, you know, increasingly consuming a lot of data online, and So it's, I think it's the kind of thing that everybody is seeing, and I think it's going to reach this inflection point very soon.
Okay. And George, what do you think?
Like Matt and Justin, I work at home, so it's critical to have a good internet connection that I can use as much as necessary for my business. Mm. I think the usage-based billing in its current incarnation is totally unworkable, and I think that's why we saw such a huge reaction to it, because it was such a blatantly anti-competitive and overcharged scenario that they were trying to push. Like you guys have said, the amount all media is going to the internet. So at some point, we're going to have to decide whether it becomes, like the CBC, a public good, or be transmitting culture to the entire nation. And then, do we make that a universal right, or do we start regulating the prices and things more accurately, more to the actual cost, like you mentioned?
Mm-hmm.
I also saw the same stats of being 3 to 10 cents or something like that.
It's 1 to 4 is what I've heard of.
I mean, 10 cents, but. Well, all right. Since we sort of established a broad sort of point, I'm gonna at this point in the conversation, I'm not going to reveal where I stand. It's better that way. Also, it allows me to play the devil's advocate. But I want to start by jumping off into something that the CRTC chairman, Conrad von Finkenstein, or Finkenstein, I hope I got that right, in his speech to the government said. He basically said that these companies had invested money in the networks, which is true.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
He also said that the people that this affects, it's 6% of internet users in Canada. So we're talking about 550,000, right, for now. And that essentially, if these big companies didn't exist, there would not be these little companies. And those two last points were, if we push bandwidth, you know, to the limit, if people continue to use more and more of these things, we're going to get congestion. And his last sort of point was, why should we make the people who just use email and a little bit of light web browsing subsidize the gluttonous? And, you know, I guess his final point was that, you know, also we're trying to make sure that there still is competition. So I'm going to throw that out to you guys, whoever wants to jump in. What do you think about some of those points that he's mentioned there?
He has, with the recent decision, they've fully eliminated competition from the market, is from what I see. They basically forced TechSavvy to charge the same that Bell is charging to all of their customers. So why would you choose them, really?
Like, yeah, I mean, the setup is not ideal from a competition point of view, where you have three companies that have sort of a set price. And we saw this with the Global Live ruling too. The fellow, and I wish I could remember his name from Egypt, who was saying that basically Canada was the only country that has this kind of major oligopoly that doesn't allow foreign ownership of of networks and foreign control of companies that are selling internet and mobile technology. So,
well, Justin, I don't know if you want to jump in and say your piece towards that. I mean, I'm going to throw it to George first. Like, there's the idea, and I don't know, I'm not even sure I'm entirely sure of what this is, but is there, our sponsor, Tecate. Is there such a thing as pushing bandwidth to the limit? Like, is there any truth to this rumor that there's like, you know, the internet is like a tap of, you know, like the tap where I turn my water on. There's only a finite amount of water. Therefore, you know, I mean, at a certain point, if we're all turning on the taps at the same time.
There is a certain point, but that's if the current telecoms stop upgrading the network.
Yeah.
Like, traffic has been growing slower than the speeds have increased hardware-wise and cost-wise. Operational costs have gone way down the last 4 or 5 years. Transmission rates available to these companies have gone way up. And, yeah, traffic's gone up a lot, something like 35 to 40% year over year. And speeds have gone up 60%, so they should be fine, realistically, if they're reinvesting in their networks. I don't see the overage rates they're charging anyway reflect the investments they would have to make to keep up. So, the utility analogy doesn't sort of falls flat with me. It's not really a finite resource. They just have to make more. It's not like, yeah, there's only so much water. There's only so much electricity.
Well, it's also only a finite resource at peak times, right? It's sort of, there's this tube that all this data that is the internet has to go through. And, you know, at 6 p.m., those tubes are clogged. And at midnight, they are not. Yeah. And charging for bits of data don't really address that problem of a clogged network.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, I mean, I don't know as much about the technology behind it, but there's also, you see that a lot of companies are putting in place traffic throttling, right? Mm-hmm. Which is sort of another way of combating this problem of sort of a clogged network. And I think we need to sort of understand a bit more about what that actually costs and what the load on the networks actually are, which is difficult to see with private corporations, but...
Justin, I don't know. For me, again, one of the things that's interesting about this is that when you actually go back and you look back 10 years or so ago, that these companies, these ISP companies, the tech savvies, they're only in business because of a CRTC ruling. Right, these companies are in business because years ago someone said, hey, it's not really fair that these companies own everything. The government has invested money, which means that I, the taxpayer, has invested money in this. So they said, we're going to force you to open up and sell this access to this bandwidth at a cheaper amount than you would typically have. And it's funny because
I
looked at it.
Not that cheap, though. It's not that cheap
in comparison to
other countries like Japan and whatnot. Like, you know, the speed that they get and the amount they pay is just very, very, well, very low price, very high rates. So, I mean, like, if Japan's doing it, why aren't, you know, why isn't it happening over here? Especially given that we're like one of the highest, one of the countries that uses the internet the most.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's
we're bored, man.
Here's
really
a couple couple of headlines I found, you know, just doing cursory searches. You know, Canada tops world, and these are recent. This is I think the reason why this is so interesting to me. What happened was that I started seeing these things. Canada is number one in YouTube viewing. Canada, you know, online viewing, our Facebook penetration rate, like, you know, something like 83% of Canadians have Facebook, right? And you start to think of that and you go like, well, why now are they trying to then turn off the throttle? Like, we're at a point, I think, where Canada should be getting access to a lot of things that are new and, you know, that are happening, that are out
there, but we
for some reason aren't, even though we have the internet and use it more than everybody else.
Well, I also feel like this whole like cap thing, because I really don't see people using, you know, whatever the cap is now. I've got a cap of like between 200 and 300 gigs. And it was only last month when I saw an extra $25 on my bill, and which coincided with when I started using Netflix, obviously, right? And clearly, I mean, this is the direction that things are going. And I feel like the CRTC is doing something similar to what the recording industry was trying to do with MP3s. Like, they're trying to stop a speeding train. It's not going to happen. It's like, either accept the way that things are going and move with it, but don't try and stop what is going on. You can't say, hey, everybody, here's all your forms of entertainment coming out of your computer, streaming, video, high quality. It gets better and better. And then be like, oh, okay, well, now that you're using it, it's gonna cost you like three times the amount. Like, you can't.
Isn't that the drug dealer approach?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, like, I mean, literally, well, like,
think of the markup that they
now
want.
You've got a taste of Netflix.
You know, yeah. Moving a gig of data at 4 cents, and they want to charge us $1.90.
Yeah.
Well, like, that's robbery. That's it should be illegal. Oh. I think it is, in fact. Like,
can we say then? I mean, let's get it out there. Is usage-based billing maybe drawing attention for the wrong reasons? Is the real reason that people are pissed because it costs way more? Like, that the costs don't seem to be in line with the actual amount that they're doing, or is it people just like, whoa,
everyone expects a markup, but like, of like, however, I don't know what the...
Hundreds of percent.
possibly even more, but like, yeah, it's just a little ridiculous. When it gets to that point, it's like, hey, you know what, like, I can understand if it costs you 4 cents, you're going to charge me 10. Fine, that's fine, but like, at $2, when streaming a movie off Netflix is an average of 1.5 gigs... So you're paying for the service, you're paying for the internet, and then you're going to be paying to watch something. So it's basically stifling this new market of streaming media, and it's like they're basically saying, yeah, you know what, let's not go there. Like, everyone's going to be using this, and let's just stay in the dark ages. You know, like
the limits are just not going to be realistic anymore. Is I think the main point that usage-based billing has existed for a long time on the big carriers. And because so few people bumped up against that for a long time, nobody really took notice. And I mean, this usage-based billing discussion is really just around some small companies like TechSavvy, but it's created this anger for so many people because they see these overage charges on their bills now. And I think a lot more people are going to see that very quickly.
Well, definitely. And obviously, like Netflix starting up in Canada the other month, you know, that's when people are going to start to see it. If it's a gig an hour... And people, you know, someone stays sick at home one day and they decide, well, I'm going to have a Mad Men marathon and just watch the whole. How much does that cost? If you're like, if your cap is 25 gigs, 25 gigs I can easily tear through just through business alone. And so therefore, like, my entertainment, I've got to pay, like, you know, basically like a rental fee. Mm-hmm. To watch a movie on Netflix, it's going to cost me the same amount to go to a video store and rent it.
That's an interesting way of looking at it.
That's exactly what they're banking on, I think. They're trying to protect their existing media businesses by making Netflix so expensive, because now you might as well just watch the CTV brand of stuff on the Bell Network.
But then why even allow them to come in the first place? It's like, it's like, okay, so literally a month or a couple months after Netflix shows up, suddenly it's like, oh, snap, like... We just realized this is actually going to be a problem. So, like, let's not say anything. And I think, you know, in a way, even though it's not affecting the masses, it somehow has touched off that sort of thing where they're like, wait a second.
Really quickly,
because, you know, you have, you know, a lot of the major companies right now, Bell saying this affects, you know, overage fees affect 10% or maybe less of our current subscribers. That's not a lot of people, right? I mean, and so at the end of the day, you got to wonder, like, how long until, like, how many years, I mean, this is a prediction game, but how many years until that 10% number becomes 50%?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think it's less than a year.
You think so?
I would say, yeah. I mean, the kind of growth we've seen in web traffic and mobile traffic and the kind of technology changes that are coming down the pipe, like, it's, you know, you're looking at months, not years, I think, really. The other point I wanted to bring up was around sort of content creation, and maybe, I don't know if Justin can speak to this, but I mean, if I were someone producing video content for the web, and this is like a major part of creative culture now, I think there's a danger that these types of limits can stifle creativity.
Right.
And... that to me seems like it could be a problem as well.
And this is primarily the argument that you hear out of TechSavvy's, the open media, as they say this is stifling to creativity. One example I heard, and then I'll let you speak to this, Justin, is that, and I think I read this in the Globe, was that there's a company who was, they do a lot of video work, and they were, you know, talking about a client about this really massive bandwidth hogging video, and they were like, well, we have to consider that people, like, this could chew up a lot of their bandwidth, right? Is that the sort of thing we're looking at in the future, where, like, that's the issue? And so we have companies that are going to say, no, we're not going to do video now.
It's like saying, no, you know, like, no more MP3s. We're going to get rid of MP3s. We've got to stop MP3s. You're not going to stop it. People are already very quickly becoming adapted to watching media online. And it, you know, it looks great. Every year it gets better, you know, with streaming and compression, and let's hope compression gets better, because that's going to help. But I also feel like this whole thing is, in a way, it's they're also thwarting piracy. You know, if you take your average suburban household that has, you know, a couple of teenagers who are downloading movies like crazy, downloading music like crazy, when the parents start to get those bills in March of, like, you know, when they're like, when all of a sudden they're getting charged like $300 for a month, for a month of internet, they're, you know, that's, they're going to go to their kids and be like, what's going on here? No more, no more of this. Yeah, so I mean, to thwart that, whatever, I actually don't, you know, I don't download an awful lot of movies. I, you know, I do like to pay for my media. Obviously, if no one's going to put money into it, it's not going to be produced anymore, right? So, you know, I get Netflix, and I'm trying to be like a, you know, I'm trying to play by the rules here, and I feel like I'm kind of being punished for people who are like wanting to download every single movie and watch. And also, you barely need to download them anymore. You can stream them off of websites. Yeah.
Well, this is interesting because I don't think this has been talked about a lot, at least not in what I've read, is that the idea that, you know, no one has sort of put forth, and I know it's probably dangerous for the major telcos and the Rogers, the Shaws, and the Bells to say, well, have you seen some of the things that people are downloading? Like, you know, I mean, in Canada, yes, you know, peer-to-peer file sharing is okay, but it is still theft. And a lot, and, you know, I mean, hand in hand, these companies have said, here's access to, like, you know, all of these stolen goods, but no one's really brought up, you know, oh, okay, well, who is it that we're looking at? Are we looking at the Netflix people, or are we looking at just Johnny, I'm going to steal every single thing I can, right? And does that change the argument for anyone? Does that make, you know, does that change and go, well, you know, if it's that, then maybe I think I'm okay with this.
That doesn't really work for me. That doesn't really convince me that much.
Why not?
You can take a kind of, if you can go back a few years, like you brought up MP3s a couple times, and you can look at the introduction of iTunes at a reasonable price point, people have no problem with paying for media. So maybe the piracy isn't so much a network issue or an overuse issue. It's more of an economic issue. So it should be tackled that way rather than...
And an access issue too, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, you torrent things because you want to have access to that on your computer that you can't get anywhere else, right? Which is the void that Netflix is filling.
Which they're now shutting with the bandwidth caps, which sort of,
And I think there's also a dangerous problem around, like, net neutrality, right? Like, if I'm paying for a certain amount of usage on a network, if I want to use a torrent legally, I should, you know, the carrier shouldn't be able to say, because you're using BitTorrent traffic, like, going in and inspecting the packets and saying, this is BitTorrent traffic, so I'm going to throttle it, but, oh, you're watching YouTube, so that's okay. Like, if I'm paying for data, I should be able to use it however I wish, as long as it's legal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't differentiate if you in any way adhere to net neutrality.
Yeah. And so there's some problems around it.
What about let's switch it up a little bit here. Just before we go into it, George, I think you were talking about this, and this is something actually that I think is really interesting, but it's the idea of, I guess, lastly, sort of just market share in Quebec, and I found this to be sort of mind-boggling, but in Quebec, there's Videotron, and Videotron, like, basically controls, you know, the internet subscribers there. And so Bell is this sort of small-time person coming in. And if you look at the rates that Bell charges in Quebec and what they charge in Ontario, I mean, for, let's say, one of their top plans is 25 gigs. In Quebec, that same plan is 60 gigs. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that sort of what we're looking for? Like, do we want somehow that to come here? You know, I mean, and whether or not is it, you know, foreign, like, do we need foreign companies to come in to be able to provide mm-hmm. that, right? I mean, the issue that, you know, it's just funny to me that the whole thing that everyone's talking about is literally happening in a different way with Bell as the opposite person, you know, as sort of the David in this David and Goliath issue. What do you guys think about that?
I disagree quite strongly with the Canadian foreign ownership rules. And I think that you'd see some major companies from the U.S. primarily coming in and installing new lines and actually creating real competition in the infrastructure market. Because that's really what we're talking about, is that it's line access and not service provider access. There's lots of service providers, and that's fine. And it costs, billions of dollars to make a national network in Canada. And you need a large corporation to come in and compete with that. So I would totally support that.
Yeah, I really think that we're going to see foreign ownership be the election issue, or one of the major election issues
this time around, this
spring, if there's a spring election, just with what was going on with Wind Mobile and.
Yeah, this is.
It's a question, right? I mean, do you improve the network through regulation, or do you improve the network through foreign ownership? And I think parties are going to pick a side on that, and I think that's going to be a.
Who says? Yeah. Matter of factly here, who says? Foreign ownership, and who says regulation here as a means to fix it?
I say foreign ownership, real competition.
Matt? Yeah, I agree.
I'm kind of split on it, in all honesty. Obviously, I would love to see Canadian businesses take off running with this, but clearly,
they haven't been doing the job very well.
Well, they're kind of at the mercy of Bell and the CRTC. It's just like they kind of make up the rules as they go along, and
then those rules are overturned by cabinet. And then that rule is then overturned again.
I feel like obviously everyone's like, I feel like everyone's breathing this sigh of relief because the conservatives have shaken their finger at the CRTC and sent them back to the drawing board. But that's really all they've done. Go back to the drawing board, and they could easily just come back and be like, all right, we're going to make it a little easier for the independents. And I think that's like one of the big issues that they're being pressed on, not so much the caps and the overbilling, but like being fair to smaller businesses. So I feel like the CRTC could just come back and be like, okay, so we've reworked it and we're going to make it easier for the smaller businesses, but you're still going to have a 25 gig cap and deal with it.
Right.
And who knows how the conservatives will respond on that one. So it's far from over, and we could still be charged, up the ass for...
it's okay to swear on the show.
Yeah, figured as much.
this is funny. I mean, this is how things are developing. As we were sort of, trying to hash out when we would meet and record this show, this popped up. I mean, for me, I thought the Wind Mobile thing was over. I thought that you're right, you were saying before Egyptian-backed, and the original sort of ruling was that, they said, listen, this company is owned by basically Egyptians, like, so we can't do this. And the ruling was sort of overturned so that, Wind Mobile or Global Live was able to set up Wind Mobile, and they've been around, and I thought that was the end of it, and I actually thought that was a good deal. But then, lo and behold, as we're discussing these other issues, up pops this decision by the CRTC that just says, hey,
There was an appeal by, Public Mobile, which is one of the other,
Companies,
basically saying, this foreign ownership rule has to apply across the board, if Global Live is allowed to have, foreign equity, then we should
have the same. Yeah, sort of gimme. I want what they have too.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, and let's steer it. Let's steer it away from that for a second, and maybe talk about this issue of sort of internet as a universal right. I want to bring up something I was listening to. Jeff Jarvis, associate professor and director of the Interactive Journalism Program and new business models for. The News Project at City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism. That is a really long title.
They call it Cunny.
Yeah. He's...
rolls off the tongue.
he blogs it at BuzzMachine.com. And recently, actually, in the same week, he was just named to Post Media Network's Digital Advisory Board. He was on cue with Gian Gomeshi this past week. Topic was Egypt and how the government shut down the internet. On January 27th, 5:20 p.m., internet, you can see the chart, it's just like, there's the internet going along, and then suddenly off of cliff, it's like lemmings, they're gone. Now, he had said in this discussion with Gian Gomeshi that the internet has become so integral to our economy that it should be a universal human right. I want to know what you guys think about that.
Well, it's communication. It's the best form of communication almost. It's, you can have video, you can have audio, and you can have email. Everything is there for you. One thing that really I haven't heard anyone talk about, but what's the how is this going to work for libraries, public libraries, mm-hmm. who offer free internet access? And it's kind of like, it's your it's where we get our information. So yes, it's very important that we have access, and I think it should be a right. It's like saying, no, you can't go into that library, or you know, like it's, yeah, it is integral. So you know, how what are libraries going to start paying for, you know, bandwidth usage? It should be like it shouldn't be an issue. They should have unlimited
access.
Yeah, yeah. People yeah. are going there to, like, you know, research or whatever. I mean, let it be.
Yeah, David Eves wrote a blog post about that same issue, and sort of saying that there needs to be a bit of a baseline for, I mean, he wanted it to be free, but sort of access to certain things that as a concerned citizen you should have access to, and because a lot of that information is available online now, or only available online, and that's part of our democratic right, is access to, you know, streaming of council meetings, for example, mm-hmm. or access to government documents, that kind of internet access cannot really factor into these discussions around how much data
freedom,
should cost.
Freedom of information. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think complete open internet access as a universal human right is, I mean, it's an incendiary thing to say, and it stokes debate. I don't know if it's, you know, can you actually legitimately create that kind of thing? Can you make everybody in the entire world have unlimited internet access? No. So, I mean, that's never going to happen. But there needs to be kind of, I think, a baseline where we say, as Canadians, you know, if you're trying to find a job, you need to have access to the internet.
Yeah,
if you're trying to do research that, you know, is part of, you know, your right as a citizen, you need to have access, you know. Maybe, you know, if you're using Netflix, that's not a universal human right.
Mm-hmm.
But to be able to communicate and to be able to access government information, I think, is very important.
George? That's really interesting you'd say that, because Finland actually legislated exactly that. They said that every single person in the nation has to have access to 1 megabit internet connections.
Hmm.
Nationwide,
I didn't know that. That's
even like all the way up into the Arctic Circle.
Really?
Way up there. So in the cities, they said 100 megabits, which is so absurdly faster than anything we have in Canada, should be available in the cities. And then 1 megabit's the minimum service level for every citizen.
Wow.
And they don't force them to buy it. Like you said, you can't make everybody get internet, but everybody has access to that level. For that reason, freedom of information, freedom of assembly, you can organize,
yep.
access to civic services.
Egypt,
like everything.
Going back to Egypt and like why they shut them down, I don't know if you saw it, but it's said that, you know, and I watched it just the other day, the YouTube video that was just like, I don't know how old the girl was. She was easily, I don't even know if she was in her 20s, but it was this one girl whose one YouTube video just went completely viral within Egypt, where she said, I'm going down to the square. It's peaceful. Her whole spiel was just about, like, here are these guys who are so desperate that they're performing self-immolation. They're just going down and setting themselves on fire to make a point. She said, I'm not going to kill myself. I'm not going to, you know, I just want to go down. I want to hold up a sign saying I'd like my rights. And she invited everyone else to come out, and she said, you know, if you want to sit at home, fine. You're part of the problem, though. If you don't come out and join me, then, you know, then don't complain when, you know, your basic human rights are continuing
away.
To be you're being deprived of your human rights. That's what sparked the decision. So obviously that's like a testament to how powerful the internet can be as a communicative tool, and, you know, public assemblies and whatnot. It's very powerful, and obviously, like, after that sparked such a huge movement, yeah, like, shut it down. But that should be, I think, like, almost an illegal act to mm-hmm. to shut down.
Flip the switch?
Yeah.
So it's certainly an anti-democratic act.
Mm-hmm. Well, clearly.
Well, you know, and this is, if I would have read this somewhere else, I would completely have, you know, just assumed that it was some sort of conspiracy theory nonsense. But, you know, I remember hearing, and it irks me that this is actually the person I remember first hearing it from. Glenn Beck was talking, everyone sort of, oh, recoils in horror, was talking about this thing, this internet kill switch. And for the longest time, I'm like, what is this guy talking about?
There is no
kill
switch.
Hmm?
There is no kill switch.
Well, there is no kill switch.
Not yet.
But not yet. Right. But there is a bill that Joseph Lieberman and I forget the other person's name put forth that would allow the president, you know, who knows whether or not they'll get it through enough that it'll be Obama, would be able to sort of look at certain things in a cyber emergency, would be able to look at certain systems, nodes, routers, whatever, and basically say, we need to press pause on that because this is something that's affecting either our economy or, you know, sort of their national security. Now, the one thing I want to say is, like, what, again, if we're in a digital economy, an informational economy, what does, isn't that almost everything? Yeah. Right? I mean, and then, so then we get back to this issue again of like, so we're talking about how it's messed up. It's really messed up in Egypt that this is going on, but right, you know, next door to us, the same thing is happening. And I just want to know what you guys, you know, sort of think on that.
The, from the George? Way you described it, I think I read the same article actually. And, the way they described it was that they were going to write language into the bill that they weren't allowed to use it to limit freedom of expression and freedom of assembly and all that stuff. But that's really nice because you can also say, but it's in the national interest to stop people from assembling and rioting and stuff like that. So it's such a slippery slope that...
Yeah, it can be
getting there.
Kind of difficult. I mean, I see that the idea behind it is to stop kind of cyber...
crime.
Terrorism.
Yeah.
Or, you know, espionage or whatever that, you know, like there's a, and there's a legitimate fear there that, you know, a rogue group of people somewhere around the world could hack into, you know, the Fed's computers and do something scary. But how exactly that would work and how, what the checks and balances are to make sure that freedom of expression still exists is kind of like a giant kill switch seems to be a very blunt hammer to deal with a problem around cybersecurity, I guess.
I just don't like kill switches in like within the country. Yeah? I mean, like you can't just cut off the internet. You
right.
Know, like I think there was like a, I can't remember his name, but I was reading an article about someone who was asked, you know, what would happen if like this like kill switch went through, and he said the internet is like, you know, is akin to a worm. You know, if you cut it in half, they just go separate ways. You know, the other half will still be there. So, I don't know the logistics behind how they would actually do it. I always understood that like in Egypt, it wasn't so much like, you know, internet is shut off. They just basically like went to the ISPs and said, shut her down, you know, have a long weekend.
Yeah, that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
Like, it was all routing through one ISP at one point, and then they turned that final one off and then it was done.
Yeah.
Well, it's, I mean, it is, I mean, it's interesting and, you know, not that we'll ever sort of agree on it. I think that, you know, a lot of the points sort of raised are interesting, but the CRTC, I guess, has also said, you know, Conrad, when he was speaking as well, said it is vital that Canadians have access. So I guess the next part maybe I want to talk about is like, is the CRTC in any way, shape or form able to, or are they understanding the internet right now? Are they getting it? Like, you know, is government, I guess, you know,
I feel like they are getting it, and that's exactly why they're trying to push this through, is they're saying, they're realizing that, like, you know, print is dying, it's going to the internet. Cable and satellite is dying, it's going to the internet. Radio is dying, it's going to the internet. All of our media is going through the internet. So, you know, now like, you know, Google Books, stuff like that, you know, like everything is going to be going through these channels. And they're like, okay, we have to like set a plan in motion where like, you know, if things are going to continue to go this way, well, how do we like
control it, regulate it? But I mean, does it
not so
seem...
much that, but like charge us, you know, charge us up the ass for it.
But I mean, but they're not charging us, right? I mean, in all honesty, the CRTC's, you know, stated mandate is to help protect consumers, right? To ensure that there's that competition, right? They're supposed to be the ones that are looking out for us to make sure that, I mean, if he's saying it's vital that Canadians have access to it, I think he has an understanding of this being, you know, important. That's something we do need. And yet at the same time, some of the decisions that have come out recently, they kind of show a side where you're like, do they really understand it? Like, are the people who are actually in power there do they get the idea about throttling? Do they get the idea about, like, that this is the way the future is moving? Like, because if they do, then why are they doing some of the things we've seen? I mean, you're saying that they're doing it to help out. Is what you're suggesting that they're helping out these Bell and these other guys sort of, and then hurting the consumer, because then that goes against what they stand for.
Sorry, who?
Well, no, they, what I'm saying is that is by saying that, you know, the CRTC is supposed to be
they're helping and
ensuring that we have access to this, that it's is regulated in a way that, you know, Canadians aren't getting screwed up and screwed over.
Well, they've never said, you know, like, you're not going to have access to it. It's always been like, obviously, like, yeah, you're going to have access to this, no problem. But they're basically just saying, just don't use it too much, you know. And it's like, again, going back to, like, you know, what I said before about kind of being stuck in the dark ages. It's like, we have to, like, move with what is inevitable. Like, what is inevitable is that all forms of media are going to be coming out of our computers, and we shouldn't be paying $400 a month. Like, because it just gets better and better, right? You know, the quality of everything just gets better. You know, everything on YouTube is, you know, HD. So it's going to be, we're going to be looking at a lot of, a hell of a lot of streaming data. And, like, in another 10 years, it's just going to be like, we're going to look back on this 200 gig cap and be like,
oh,
like, so we have to be prepared for the fact that, like, it's, you know, in the next 10 years, we're going to be increasing our data usage in a big way, and we shouldn't have our wallets gouged for merely going with the flow, basically. Like, this is the way things are going. People want their stuff on demand. They don't want to, like, you know, wait for their show to be on. They, you know, want to watch it when they want to watch it. The only way to do it is, well, obviously there's, like, Rogers On Demand and whatnot, all those services, but
okay.
I think Matt? Part of the problem is that the CRTC is there to interpret the Telecom Act, right? So the kind of changes that Justin is talking about are... It's not something that can be put in place by the CRTC. The CRTC can't say, we're going to try and institutionalize universal access to the internet, and we're going to make sure that consumers get a fair shake and all that. Like, it needs to be through an act of parliament. So there needs to be a government that takes the issue as an election issue or whatever, and makes it something that Canadians have a debate about and seriously legislate, right? Like, it's the CRTC goes in and says, this is what the Telecom Act, this is how we interpret the Telecom Act, and so because of that, because of foreign ownership rules, et cetera, this is how we see this playing out. But aside from that, they're kind of hamstrung, I think.
Yeah, I think the CRTC's mandate says specifically that they're not allowed to set price points or anything like that. Per the Telecom Act, they just have to maintain... like Justin mentioned, like, competition, basic competition. And right now, technically, I could go with Rogers or I can go with Bell. It's competition. So they are fulfilling their mandate. So I think as a regulator, they really are still in the dark ages, to use the term.
They're in the dark ages.
Totally accurately, but not from their own fault, because of legislation hasn't caught up to the reality of how quickly things are changing, how quickly things are converging. And if you look at the makeup of the CRTC board, and I don't want to be any conspiracy theory or anything, but they all come from Bell and Rogers, so there's a serious understanding of the issue.
Well, there's actually regional representation too. So there's people from smaller telecoms across the country, but it is definitely people with a telecom background.
The old the government sacks they say for Goldman Sachs, you know, once you're done with Goldman making your money, you just move on over to the government and then help your former company and yourself. Mm-hmm. So we're coming up on almost we're getting towards the end here. I think the last thing I want to sort of discuss before we end the show, and that's the merger, like the BCE-CTV merger. And you know, we got the biggest telecom provider, private broadcaster, internet provider, and the second largest wireless provider are set to merge when BCE acquires CTV. What the hell is going to happen, Matt? What do you think is going to happen? This is primarily your business. I mean, more screens.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really... I'm going to talk about this in very general terms, because as an employee of the Globe and Mail that was owned by CTV Go Media, I cannot really comment too much on. And the Globe is still 15% owned by Bell, so just put that out there. But
don't take his job. He's a good guy. He's a good guy.
I mean, so you also saw Shaw purchase Global TV when sort of the post-media shakeup was happening. So there's the general idea is that the three big media companies are trying to have content as well as pipes. They don't want to be dumb pipes for companies to distribute their content on. So the general idea is you're able to buy a media producer and use that content as a way of attracting subscribers. And that's the bet. Whether it works this time versus last time when they bought CTV, who knows? But, yeah.
What do you think, George?
The way you termed that sort of surprised or caught me. They're going to buy content in order to attract subscribers. Well, I mean, it shouldn't matter who you're subscribing to access that content. That's the basic tenet of net neutrality, right? So it seems like the implicit intent in all these mergers is to, at some point, attack that and start to be able to control and throttle the media over your network. And we're seeing the same kind of battles happening in the U.S. They've already gone through their consolidation. Comcast. All that's happening. And now they're having some serious discussions about net neutrality because it's becoming a very large issue there. And the companies are lobbying strongly against all of the internet giants against it. So I think we're going to see the same kind of things start happening here. Netflix is right now like the media company that's most affected by the current thing. And they have been pretty vocal in Canada that they're scared of that happening.
Yeah, I mean, just before you go, Justin, I mean, they've been putting out, and I think they said they're going to continue to put out, you know, a sort of a ranking of, like, which ISPs are, like, sort of, you know, delivering their services the best, right? So there is that as well. And, that, you know, I mean, they've also spoken up and said the same sort of argument that we heard earlier in the discussion, which is that we don't want to jump really into this argument, but the amount that they're charging is like way too much, mm-hmm. right? So it went back to price. But Justin, I'll let you jump in.
Oh, you know what? I think I lost my point.
Well, I mean, you know, and I know, Matt, you can't speak to this too much, but I mean, what is the idea? I guess is that, you know, as a mobile developer, what do you want to do in the future? Like for the Globe and Mail? I mean, is that you know sort of number one in your head is that you want to push video content to my smartphone?
The Globe and Mail isn't primarily a video producer, but it's clear that mobile is the way things are going, and that, you know, there are predictions that, you know, by 2012, 2013, that mobile traffic is going to be higher than web traffic in general. Mm. So I think that's the kind of numbers that these telecoms are seeing and are saying we need to react to that and make sure that, you know, we have an attractive offer. And then, I guess there is definitely a net neutrality issue around it. Hopefully when that shakes out, there'll be a robust public discussion.
Well, I think we had a pretty good discussion there. I mean, sort of in my head, I've been able to sort of maybe work through things a little more. You know, the idea I think I want to leave everyone with, and leave all the listeners in, as well as you gentlemen as well, thank you for being here, is that, you know, and this is something you brought up, Matt, maybe it's time that we have this discussion on, you know, in terms of politics. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, whether or not, or there's a lot of election issues, I guess, that are out there, but this doesn't seem like it's one of them, you know, in terms of what the governments are talking about. But I think when you raise that issue, it sort of led me to think that maybe it's something that we need to stand up for. I mean, you know, in the whole sort of conversation, I remember watching on Friday, I believe it was Friday afternoon, Tony Clement went on Power and Politics, which I like to say is the grown-up version of this show. And he was talking to Tony Clement, and you know, Tony Clement tweeted the news that he was going to be, you know, that he's basically going to pull out the Trump card on the CRTC. Like, he tweeted that, and he didn't actually tell the CRTC first. He was like, and he said straight up, he's like, this is a technology that helps me speak to the stakeholders. I use it. Therefore, there's nothing wrong with doing it. I'm going to continue to do it. And
you know, that combined with some of the other things we've been talking about, the fact that, you know, we need in this economy to have the internet to do what we're doing. Like, manufacturing isn't going to be the bulk of what Canada does anymore. So, yeah, I think maybe what's important is that we not let this issue, you know, go quiet or sort of disappear. That we sort of, when it comes time for us as, you know, as young people who are working in these industries, that we need to go and say to our, you know, our constituents, not our constituents, but our representatives that, listen, this is something that's important to me. And we've seen that they'll listen. Right. We saw, I think, you know, within the span of days that they're listening. It's just a matter of now making sure that we can have this conversation about how we want to address the internet in this country going forward.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, definitely if we don't as Canadians kind of really raise these issues, you know, if this does go through, it's obviously like it'll be months before other countries just do the exact same thing to their citizens. And it's so we really have to kind of set a standard and be like, hey, like what's fair, what's unfair. And hopefully what the outcome will be will hopefully be a pretty decent model for the rest of the world and not just like, oh yeah, well the customer gets screwed, deal with it.
So maybe we can, in a way Canada can take a leadership role on
definitely,
this.
Definitely, yeah.
Matt, do you have any final comments?
Nope. I think you're right. It is a policy issue that people need to pay attention to, and I think even though it's not sexy, will become an election issue because it also revolves around foreign ownership, and that's a big question for Canadians too. So I hope that, you know, an election can be about such an interesting and important topic rather than about politics.
Yeah, so maybe instead of the what's the ad that there the conservatives are always playing, the Michael Ignatieff, if he's not here for you, you know, we'll actually be like, hey, we say, and they do say like, hey, we're for the consumer, we're for making sure there's real competition, that's what we're about. So maybe it's time that they actually put that into, you know, real legislation that changes the way Canada accesses the internet or uses the internet. George, I'll give you the final word, and we'll call it quits and say goodbye.
I think we've all agreed that the internet is becoming critical to civic engagement and democracy and economics in this country. So I'm pretty interested to see if people keep paying attention to the CRTC's decision, because they've only delayed implementation for 60 days. They haven't reversed their ruling yet. So in 60 days, are we going to see another grassroots uprising? I don't know. Let's see. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I want to again thank my guests, Justin Tripp, Matt Frainer, and George Gabbro. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me. Again, at some point you may be required to step back into these shoes. If and when, maybe down the road, maybe when some of these decisions are sort of reached, and maybe we can get back together and have this discussion again. Anyway, this has been an episode of Real Talk TO Real Talk. I'm your host, Pierre Hamilton. And again, this is the show where I host a roundtable discussion where me and my guests, we explore the issues of the day. Anyway, this has been episode 3. I hope you enjoyed it. You can tune in. I'll also be setting up a Twitter feed as well. Hopefully I can get the best name I can. I don't know if I'll be able to fit it in, but we'll see. So that's about it for this show. Again, tune in next time. And as always, stay up to date. Peace.